The opinions expressed here on the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast are solely those of the presenters, not the opinions of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hi, this is Marcus Elliott from Flint River Church in Hazel Green, Alabama, and you're listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McCabe.
And we are back, Youth Ministry Sherpas, episode 45. Hey, everyone. My name is Matthew McCabe.
And I'm Steve Anderson. We are the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast, helping youth workers to keep going.
And here we are again. How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Yeah, how are you?
I'm hanging. Feeling a little tired.
Yeah, okay.
Up at the break of dawn this morning.
Yeah.
Starting a little 10-day challenge.
Really?
At the training center that I go to, the gym.
Oh, what's the challenge?
So it's a no carb, no sugar for 10 days.
Okay.
So I'm kind of going on this like paleo kind of like fruits, vegetables, meats, nuts, you know, greens, that kind of stuff. No nutty bars, no...
This just started today?
It started this morning. So
if I see you a couple of days from now, you're going to be like crawling in here?
I might be a little grumpy. I'm glad we're recording today and not like in 3 days because I feel like tomorrow and the next day are going to be super grumpy days for me.
It's a good thing you're not a coffee drinker.
No, I don't drink coffee.
So that doesn't impact you when you have to do these fast.
Yeah, but I'm a Diet Coke drinker, and I drink more Diet Coke than most people drink coffee. So there will be some detoxing going on. And okay. Probably by midday tomorrow, I'll be in my bed with the shakes, probably. I don't know. We'll see. But other than that, I'm doing great. I think it's going to be great. I need it. I need a little kickstart here, so it's all good.
That's cool. Good for you. If you haven't listened to us for a while, or maybe never, we'd just like to introduce ourselves again. We are two youth pastors from the state of Maryland who've been doing youth ministry for, I don't know, almost
a long
60
time.
Years.
Yeah, 60 years combined.
So we started this podcast to encourage youth workers to hang in there and experience some of the blessings of longevity. And we hope it's helpful for you. If it is, would you mind going out on iTunes and sharing a review with us and share it with your friends, pass the word along. If you know people in youth ministry, youth pastors, youth workers, we hope that they'd be blessed and benefit from listening to this podcast.
Yeah, you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook.
Yep.
And we love to interact with our listeners. So if you ever have a question or a thought or an idea of an episode, like, hey, talk about this, shout out at us and we'll add it to the list.
We'd love it. So have you ever had to clean up after somebody else's mess?
I feel like that's like the third bullet point in my job description as a youth pastor. The answer is yes. Of course, we spend a lot of our lives cleaning up after events. You know, everybody goes home and then there we are with tables and chairs and chips all over the floor. And
sometimes it's at my home.
Oh, and then you still have to clean up.
Like
for it, right?
Almost every morning now, I come downstairs and my dog... My dog is taken to dropping a load on this one place of the carpet in the basement.
Oh, that's terrible.
Isn't it?
And who has to clean that up?
Me or my wife.
Of course you have to clean
that
up. Yes.
Yeah. And it's so gross.
Yeah.
I don't know. I should send her back.
Yeah.
I don't know where she came from, but I should send her back.
Nah, keep the dog. But yeah, we spent a lot of time cleaning up after somebody else's mess. I remember, and this is burned in my memory. It was a missions trip probably back in the early 90s. It was in Mexico with a group of students, and we had driven through the night to get to this place. We were tired and driven most of the next day. And
you drove evening, from Wisconsin?
From Wisconsin to
that
Mexico.
That is the dumbest thing
it
you've ever
terrible.
Done.
Anyway, we're staying in this like kind of dorm-like thing. It's a really long, narrow room. Bunk beds everywhere. Mattresses right. on the floor. We just packed in there.
Luxury accommodations.
Linoleum floors, right? And it's empty other than the bed. So it's just echoey. And the bathroom was on one end. And I'm sleeping on this mattress. And it's like 3 o'clock in the morning.
And so far, I just want to clarify the elements here. You've got a whole drive all the way from Wisconsin.
Yep.
Right? You've got Mexico.
Yep, yep.
You've got 3 a.m.
and
I can only imagine where this is going.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you can kind of hear somebody running down the long, you know, dormitory towards that, you know, pow, pow, pow. And then, of course, you hear... And then you hear what sounds like somebody throwing a 5-gallon bucket of water on the floor. Gross. Now, there were a few other groups there that we had met there. So there were a couple other youth groups there. I remember laying on my mattress on the floor and praying, "Dear Lord, let this be a student from one of the other groups." And as I'm praying, I got the soft hand on the shoulder. "Matthew, I puked." And so then there you go. Of course, you're not asking the kid who's sick as a dog to clean up his own puke. So there I am on my hands and knees cleaning up puke at 3 o'clock in the morning, cleaning up somebody else's mess. What about you?
I got to admire that. I can't do that. No, I mean, I physically can't do that. When our kids would vomit, it was Karen's job. It was Karen's job. I mean, she can do it without gagging. I can't. I would have gone in and thrown up. I would have added to the pile.
I gagged through the whole thing. I didn't throw up, but I gagged. I don't throw up. I've thrown up once in the last 30 years. Yeah. But I gagged through the whole thing for sure.
I mean, there's lots of cleanup. A little bit less gross than that. But, I mean, you're right. Almost every week, you're the one going around the youth room at the end, picking up the trash, putting the chairs back, and, you know, putting things away, cleaning up the snack bar. Like, you know,
as the student pastor with responsibilities over student ministry, have you ever had to clean up from some other ministry's event in the church?
I shall not comment on such a thing.
Yes. It never happens, right?
Never happens.
You never have to put tables away for the women's ministry or clean up the donuts from the men's ministry.
In all fairness, we're probably guilty on the other end, too.
Oh, I'm sure of it. Sure.
No, you're right, though, because our room in the church is the most popular room. Everyone wants to use it because it's the coolest. So, yeah.
Yeah. So part of the gig is cleaning up somebody else's mess.
But absolutely.
But those pale in comparison to when you really have to clean up somebody else's mess.
There are moments where the mess is more than just the physical, more than just the
chips on the floor,
soda in the carpet, you know, spilled M&Ms or whatever. When the mess is more along the lines of some kind of moral failure or break in relationship that really causes a lot of grief and trouble.
Yeah, when somebody on staff or in a significant leadership position in your church makes it a very regrettable decision that then causes these ripples of effect that just bring just nothing but chaos to your staff, to your church family.
And ultimately to you.
And for sure, ultimately to you. I mean, we were just hanging out with our local network a few days ago, and a couple people in there were sharing the story of some things that had just come to light at their church in a really just horrible situation, and they were visibly upset. I mean, tears were shed because that mess that they had nothing to do with creating is wreaking havoc in them and in their ministry.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And you and I have both had an experience like that
in our
church and had to weather this storm, had to process that personally and process it from a leadership standpoint and from a youth ministry standpoint. What do you do when you have this mess caused by somebody that you have to clean up? In our case, we had one of our staff members who had an affair and was subsequently let go. And he was a close friend and a great guy. I love him, and his marriage is now restored. But at the time, I remember actually going to my son, and my son loved this guy. And that's one of the only times I've actually seen my own son cry when I told him what had happened. Sure. And he was just heartbroken by it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's going to be times you had a similar situation.
Yeah, we had a similar situation. This is quite a few years back where one of our staff members also had an inappropriate relationship with another person who was employed at the church and was also one of my youth leaders at the time. And I remember I was actually the person who that youth leader then sort of confessed to happening, and then and then it was brought to the leadership, and you know, it was just a mess from start to finish. And again, the good news is both of those marriages are still intact and thriving. God has restored both of them. Neither of them work for the church anymore, but God definitely did incredible things. But boy, that didn't change the fact that it was a mess. It was a hot mess for quite a season.
Yeah, and so the thing that you're passionate about, the student ministry and all the things that go along with that, all of your energy is now directed sideways.
Correct.
To something else for a significant season, your emotional energy, your time, the number of meetings you've got.
Your priorities, yeah, absolutely.
All of that just gets hijacked by these circumstances that we have nothing to do with.
And we got to clean up somebody else's mess.
It's tough.
And so we thought it'd be good to just kind of talk through, because again, unfortunately, maybe this has happened already in your circumstances. Unfortunately, if it hasn't, statistically speaking, over the course of your career, you'll probably be in the neighborhood of this, mm-hmm. if not right in the middle of it. And so we just thought it'd be good to think about, like, how do we process that personally, emotionally, mm-hmm. and then how do we process that leadership-wise so that we come out the other side in a better place, despite the mess.
Right. You mentioned that you learned to not take it personally.
Yeah.
You were able to come to the point where you didn't take it personally. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think when it first happened, and then, of course, everything is thrown into chaos, and you're walking next to your senior pastor who's devastated because now they're having to do this. And I just remember being so angry for the position that their decision put me in.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it very personal. I was just like, you're messing with my life. You're messing with my emotions, with my ministry, with my everything. And it took a long time to realize, but it was the first step to sort of working through the process to realize that it wasn't personal. When this person made that mistake or the series of mistakes that were made to lead up to it, they weren't thinking about how it would affect me. They weren't. I mean, at the end of the day, they weren't thinking about how it affected anybody.
Right.
That's the point
they were caught
of
up,
a mistake.
Yeah, caught up in a sin. Yeah.
It's something that has also helped me in raising teenage children.
Mm.
You know, and we had some very wise people speak that truth into our life to say the tendency is to take it personal, especially because of the depth of relationship with your kids.
Yeah.
But you think, you know, what were they thinking? They weren't thinking at all, of course. So it's not like this person was thinking of me. And so that was, for me, my first step to sort of starting to process it healthily, was to just not take it personal.
And that's not easy, because sometimes the situation may be more personal than other times. You may be very close friends with the person who's messed up. I mean, if it's one of your youth leaders,
yeah,
or whatever. And the circumstance you mentioned at the beginning about from this other church that we just talked about at our network last Friday, they were close friends. The youth pastor and this person were close friends. They were actually accountability partners.
Yeah.
And so there was an ongoing deceit. And so it was really hard for our friend
to not take it personally.
And
sure.
yet it's not about him. It's about the other person's mistake that he's probably ashamed to come clean on. And so, yeah, I don't know how you get to that point, but you have to.
But you have to. And then that leads you to another important step in the process, at least that I worry, and that's transferring anger. Because I just remember being so angry. I mean, do you remember feeling angry when that all went down? Or
you know, I actually don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's good. You gotta be honest here.
You teed it up, and I wasn't angry. I was really surprised at our specific situation, just circumstantially. I thought, how did this happen? But I wasn't angry, but I was very sad.
Yeah.
I was very sad, just kind of heartbroken about it. But I, you know, the same emotions, you have to work through the anger and the disappointment.
Sure.
In somebody.
Yeah, I couldn't even bring myself to be disappointed. I was so angry. And it wasn't until I kind of gave that anger over to a little bit more of a disappointment, which led to compassion.
Compassion, yeah.
Which led to this idea of like, oh, what must have been going on in this person's life or heart, or, you know, that led to this decision. And then it just shifted my focus from the mess and from the extra work and from the more extra meetings and all the other things that were sort of wreaking havoc in my life to, yeah, just a genuine compassion for the other person and for, oh, what a long road this person now has in front of them to be restored in their all of their relationships.
And thinking about the other people who've been affected could be helpful too. You know, think about the direct family members, in-laws or other friends. It impacts a lot of people and it's not personal to us. So just thinking about how many relationships are suffering because of this maybe would put us in a place of a little bit more compassion.
Not just my relationship. Yeah. Although, yes, my relationship was affected, but so many relationships were affected.
Yeah.
So earlier you mentioned that, like, in your specific circumstance, that you were, instead of being angry, you were shocked, you were surprised. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was surprised because I couldn't imagine how this had happened, how this person had managed to carry this out. But as I look at it now, I'm not shocked or surprised because I hear so many stories. You're always shocked when it's close to you, when it hits home.
Right.
You know, that's the part that
is shocking.
Oh, I can't believe this happened. But if you step back and you think about it theologically, you think about it just historically, these things happen as unfortunate as they are because people are screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
So we shouldn't be super shocked and ultimately not surprised by people's mistakes. I mean, if Christianity had been derailed by people's moral failures, it would have been derailed 3,500 years ago. This is the story of the human race. This is the story of sin and sin's nature and its hold on people. And it affects everybody, Christian, non-Christian, church, non-church.
Exactly.
And so when it hits us, yeah, we're surprised because now it's in our face. Exactly. But ultimately,
we shouldn't
be too surprised because this is what happens in humanity.
And the fact that we shouldn't be surprised because of just the glaring human nature that we all possess should be a wake-up call for us as well. I know that watching that circumstance unfold impacted me from a retrospective, you know, kind of introspection of, like, you know, everyone uses this phrase all the time, and I'm not a ginormous fan, but by the grace of God, so go I.
Right.
You know, and I think, wait, does that mean that that person didn't have any grace? Because that doesn't make any sense. So, but I understand the spirit of it. The spirit of it is, if I'm not careful,
you're so cynical.
I am a little cynical, and I apologize. It's the detox. I'm sorry, but no, it's that idea of if I'm not careful, people wouldn't be shocked if I end up there.
Right.
So what am I doing to make sure I don't end up a statistic or a story that somebody else tells on a podcast?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, we see in the situation our own propensity to sin, and it is a bit of a
wake-up call.
A wake-up call for us. So it's not personal. We have to process the emotions ourselves, and we ultimately realize it's not shocking because this is what happens. So that brings us to the outcome of this. How do we get to the point where we can realize it's not the end of the world?
But it feels like that.
It does.
When you're in the, especially when you're in that processing of emotion, it feels like this is just going to wreck everything. And in some cases, I know that in some cases that actually happens. But we serve a God who just is all about
trading my sorrows. I'm trading my shame.
But yeah, that it feels like everything's falling apart, but we serve this God who's all about restoration and all about redemption. I mean, the prophet Isaiah says we trade beauty for ashes, that he's in the business of taking horrible, difficult things and making them beautiful again.
Yeah. It isn't the end of the world. These circumstances can actually provide a galvanizing moment for a church and make, in some ways, make you stronger. I mean, in the case of your staff, when this happened, you know, since then, your staff has actually gotten a lot closer, a lot stronger, haven't they?
Yeah, that was a moment for our staff to realize the importance of our relationships with each other. And of course, we all know that relationships tend to grow deeper and stronger in the midst of trials and struggles. They can grow in neutral times and good times, but they really get some deep roots when you're going through some difficult times. And for us, you know, that happened, and we came out of that realizing the importance of our relationships outside of our working relationships, that our friendships mattered for whatever might lie ahead for us as a church and as a ministry. And so we actually started doing more things together socially, you know, fun things, go bowling or go mini golfing or have dinner together or go to the movies. You know, it pushed us in a new and better direction that I'm not sure we would have ever found our way to without this circumstance.
And at the time, you probably thought, oh, this is the end.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There were days and weeks that I thought, oh man, the whole thing's coming crumbling down.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. A few crumbles came off, but we came out of it stronger. Yeah. Not only as a staff, but even as a church. I think our church was in a healthy place after that because of the way that we openly and worked through it.
Yeah. I'd say the same is true of our church as we came through that time. Just people were heartbroken over it. But one thing that the senior pastor kind of led us to do was to wait on replacing that person.
Mm.
And so rather than run out and search for the next worship pastor, we waited about a year and prayed and struggled with some of the volunteers leading worship every week. It got to be a bit of a drain for them, you know. But in the end, we ended up in a really strong place. We have a great guy here now. And we look back on that, and I think by and large, the church leadership is able to look at itself and say, you know, we did right by that in terms of the person, in terms of the church and the congregation, in terms of where we are as leaders. So, yeah, it was a bit of a galvanizing moment. Not that we would ever want to go through it again.
You don't want to wish it upon.
No, of course not. But hopefully something good has come from that. So as we wrestled through that, in each case, it was an affair by another member of our church staff. How did you work that through with the students in your youth ministry? Because you're not a giant church. They had a relationship with that person.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Right. Yeah. We had to process it with our students. Yeah, because of our size of our church and their relationship, but also because the person that was involved in this was actually a youth leader. And so there was even a deeper. And so it was even messier. And so I remember that night where we gathered the students together to sort of bring the news to them. And I remember just thinking over and over about how do we present this? And I think I thought for a long time about how do I water this down so that I can give them something that, and true, it is students, so we have to kind of give them an appropriate amount of information. But I was really convicted with, no, you need to be honest and you need to be transparent, but you need to make sure that that doesn't come with any smell of gossip or anything like that, but that you're honest and that you're transparent. And so I remember being very emotional when I talked to the students about it, because that was honest. I was emotional. And so for me to just give information to them, which is kind of where I started, let me just give them the information. This is what happened. These are the things that are happening now because of what happened. And this is what will happen in the future because of what happened.
That was
sort of my approach, because I thought, well, that's going to be the easiest for them to deal with. But it was disingenuous.
And so you couldn't keep your own emotion out of it.
No, you couldn't, because that's real. And so, and they'll then allow the students to also be emotional about it. Some of the students, because of lack of relationship, were just like, oh, okay, well then who else is going to do that job now? Okay, that was their question. Others, clearly much more invested relationally, and they were devastated.
Right.
And you got to allow that. And then at that point in time, I had to put my big boy pants on and allow myself to be there for those students who were devastated by it.
Ultimately, it's a teachable moment. You're teaching your students about the brokenness of people, and it affects everybody. It affects people in the church and out of the church. It affects pastors and church leaders. And to help them come to terms with the fact that their faith is not based on people and personalities. Their faith is based on Jesus Christ.
Right.
It's based on God's perfection, not the seeming charisma or skill or talent or personality of any person.
Right. Or the mistake of a person.
Yeah.
I remember having a conversation with a student who I think was already sort of wandering from the faith and chose to use
looking for an excuse to blame
as a reason to say, like, ah, this whole thing is just a crock. If that person, you know, is going to do this, then I'm out. And I just remember having this, like, well, that's not fair. You can't rest the hopes of Jesus and his church on one person's mistake. And that conversation didn't end well. But I think that person was already sort of down that road before that happened.
So at least you have that opportunity to talk through, you know, it's a worldview thing. What is wrong with people that we do stupid things like this? How can we avoid them in our own lives? And how do we offer grace to people who've made mistakes? And how does the church carry on? What's the mission of the church in a situation like this? To carry on, to be positive, to care for people, and yet not be waylaid by these mistakes.
Right. That was another lesson that we learned as a volunteer staff in the youth ministry and as a staff, is that then we had to model compassion and forgiveness and model a hope for restoration. You know, there's sometimes such a call for justice, and there's a place for justice, and lots of things happen. That person was no longer employed by the church because of decisions, not only that he made, but then decisions he made in the wake of sort of it being found out. So there's justice there, but you have this sense like, you did wrong, you should suffer. And to teach our kids that, no, what we want is for God to restore them. Mm-hmm. What we want is for God to forgive them and bring them back into relationship. And
as he's done for us.
Yes, as he's done for us. And so that was a big lesson we took out about how we have to be super intentional about modeling that, because that's not what comes natural, especially in the emotional times.
These aren't fun stories, are they?
No, they're not. No, this is not a...
But the reality is they may happen in your context.
They may have already happened in your context.
They may be happening now. And if they are, man, it sucks. We're really sorry.
Yeah.
But it's not
the end of the world.
It's an opportunity to galvanize your students, your church, around the gospel, around Jesus, instead of around people. And ultimately, that will play to a glorious future.
So hopefully, these thoughts, these ideas, these random ramblings from Steve and Matthew today help you just maybe get a mindset for, you know, how you'd walk through that if you should find yourself in this situation, which we pray you don't, but we want you to be prepared if you do.
Sure. And that's why we're here, to encourage youth workers to keep going, because these are the kinds of things that can cause people to walk away from this calling. And we don't want that to happen.
We want you to still
persevere through the tough times and come out on the other side and be stronger, you know? You know, sometimes when a bone breaks and re-heals, it's stronger than it was before. And isn't that really the goal, as we help students and help our church navigate through difficult times, to come out stronger and more galvanized, more unified in Christ than we were before?
Absolutely. Well said, Steve. Why are you laughing?
Because this final version, we're going to edit out the four times I said it wrong. Or said it in a way that just didn't make any sense. But that's why we have editing software.
Absolutely.
So welcome to podcasting world.
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll be back next week with episode 46. I feel, Steve, after this episode, that maybe episode 46 we should choose a lighter topic. Maybe somewhere we could tell some fun stories and laugh a little bit. You down with that?
That sounds good. We can tell more poop and puke
and
stories.
And puke stories? I don't know about that. I have more, but I'm not sure we want to tell them.
Okay, we'll find another topic for you for next week. Anyway, tune in next time, Youth Ministry Sherpas Podcast. And in the meantime,
Sherpas out.